This is Audible.
Macmillan Audio presents Shacking Up by Helena Hunting. Read for you by Rose DiOro and Jacob Morgan.
Chapter 1. Keep your tongue to yourself. Ruby. I set the half-full limoncello martini, it's as close to honey and lemon water as I'm going to get right now, on the table, and nab the waiter as he passes. Taking one of the offered napkins, I daintily select a variety of appetizers, oohing over the mushroom blah 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 canapes. The name of the appetizer doesn't matter as much as how good it is. My taste buds are dancing with joy, and so is my stomach. If this engagement party is an indicator of what the wedding will be like, I'm going to smuggle Tupperware in my purse. My best friend, Amelie, who I refer to as Amy, and have since we met in prep school, is marrying an insanely wealthy man. Which makes sense, since she also comes from an incredibly wealthy family. This union is still a couple of steps up the social ladder for her, so in her family's eyes, she's making a very smart partner choice. As a product of the same kind of privileged background, I will say this financial partnership dance is one of the less desirable parts of being among the wealthy. Our parents all preach about marrying for love, but really, it's marrying for love of the bank account and maintaining status. Amy's fiancé has a bank account the size of a porn star's dingle, according to her reports. His actual dingle is just average, which is a little sad. But you can't have everything. I ignore the waiter's disapproving frown as I delicately shove an adorable shrimp tart in my mouth to make room for one more on my cocktail napkin. Plates would be far more effective, but I set mine down somewhere and someone's already been by to clear it away. I'll make do with the napkin. My current employment status, or unemployment status to be more accurate, means I've had to resort to a modified eating plan. One that consists of a lot of ramen noodles. I could ask my father for help, more than he already provides. But requesting additional funds will prove to both of us that I'm struggling to make it on my own. That is not an option. The minute I do that, he'll have me moving back to Rhode Island so I can sit behind a desk and become another one of his corporate drones. That definitely ranks low on my list of awesome things to do with my life. I wait until the waiter has moved on to the next group of people, make sure no one's paying attention to me, then pretend I'm looking for something in my purse, which, in reality, I am. I stealthily open the plastic baggie, fold up the napkin with the shrimp tart, and slide it inside. This is the third time I've done this tonight. I've racked up quite an array of snacks for the next couple of days. They'll make nice sides for my ramen noodle dinners and lunches. Between appetizer thieving sessions, I've been busy scoping out the hotties since I'm without a date. I suppose I could have invited someone, but an engagement party is the kind of event that indicates interest in further dates. Currently, there's no one I'm that interested in. Besides, I have an audition tomorrow, and I can't be up late. This negates any potential for post-date makeout sessions, so it's better that I came alone anyway. Instead of wallowing in self-pity over my datelessness, I'm ranking the eligible bachelors on their hair and shoes. Hair says a lot about a man. I know who has plugs and who doesn't. Plugs indicate self-consciousness and excessive vanity. Shoes also tell me a lot about the type of man I'm interacting with. If the shoes are pointier than mine, The man is usually too high maintenance. And by that I mean that his expectation of women is outside of anything that I'd ever be willing to comply with. Plugs and pointy shoes are the worst of the worst. Those men are the ones most likely to insist on boob jobs and liposuction. Whatever it takes to make their wives look as close to Barbie as possible. I refuse to be someone's silent arm candy. Ruby, everything okay? Amy puts her hand on my shoulder. What? Oh yeah, everything's fine. I have to get going, unfortunately. I should have left half an hour ago, but the food is incredible. She side hugs me. I'm glad you could come for a little while. I honestly wish I could stay longer. I feel bad about having to leave so early, and without even one phone number. Although, in fairness, I've been distracted with appetizer thieving. She waves a dismissive hand. I'm sure there will be plenty more parties before the wedding. I know you must be nervous about the audition, and excited. I'm crossing everything that it goes well tomorrow. I'd even cross my vagina lips if they hung low enough. Amy coughs and glances around to make sure the pickle-up-the-ass trust fund boys missed my inappropriate vagina talk. Sorry. I only sort of mean it. I don't want to embarrass my friend, but it's only since a massive 3-carat diamond-toting man came into her life that she's adopted this somewhat snooty upper-crust attitude. Vagina jokes used to be our thing. At least in college they were. She flutters a hand around in the air, the one with the rock, and smiles. It's fine. I shouldn't even care. But Armstrong's mother will end up with a case of the vapors if she hears anyone say anything pertaining to hoo-haws. That my best friend is referring to girl parts as hoo-ha is more reason to worry about this engagement. Never have we traded dirty sex part names for highbrow, approved ones, until now. Amelie! There you are. I've been looking for you everywhere. I need you for photographs. Amy turns to address the woman who's approaching. Oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't realize they were scheduled now. She looks as if she's probably somewhere in her late 50s, although extensive surgeries keep her skin baby bottom smooth. At least the skin on her face. Her neck tells another story. I take in the rest of her. She's wearing a black dress that says funeral more than engagement party, and around her neck is some kind of animal. Is that alive? I reach out as if I'm about to give her pet a pat, but her recoil has me mirroring her. Huh! She barks out a laugh. Aren't you a funny one? Her tone seems to imply she doesn't find me funny in the least. That's a stole, I say stupidly. Is that a fox? She strokes the dead animal wrapped around her neck, her lip peeling back in distaste. It's a mink. At least it's not a baby seal. Who in the world wears fur stoles in this century, unless they've been abandoned in the wilderness and need it for survival? And it's May. Let's hope PETA isn't waiting outside of the bucket of paint, huh? She blinks at me. Gwendolyn, this is my best friend and maid of honor, Ruby Scott. Ruby, this is Armstrong's mother. Shit. I've just insulted my best friend's soon-to-be mother-in-law. This is not a good start. Gwendolyn holds out a hand, as if she's expecting me to kiss it. I shake it instead. Oh, yes. Amelie's told me about your family. Scott Pharmaceuticals, isn't that right? She tilts her head and arches a brow. Or at least I think that's what she's doing. It's hard to tell, since very little of her face seems to move. Yes. I hate this part. The way people look at me differently the moment they know who my family is. And that I come from money. Then there's the judgment that I don't quite belong because I'm new money, unlike Amy. I'm third generation trust fund, but in this circle, that's considered new. Your father's new medical laboratory has made some groundbreaking discoveries, hasn't it? She sounds like she disapproves. Maybe her husband has discovered the wonders of the artificial, never-ending hard-on, and her dried-out vagina is angry with me. My father's team created the newest erectile dysfunction medication. It's a real porn star legacy. I nod and smile, even though my father had absolutely nothing to do with the actual development of the medication. He just struts around making people think he did. Ruby is just on her way out. I'll be along in a moment, and then we can take some pictures. Of course, of course. Gwendolyn waves us off as Amy takes my arm and guides me away. Gwendolyn is already striking up a conversation with someone else. I'm sorry about the stole comment, I mutter as we cross the room. It's fine. She's drunk, so she probably won't remember anyway. She seems like a real piece of work. It also explains a lot about Armstrong. I'm still trying to figure out his allure. He seems to walk around with an entire jar of pickles rammed up his ass at all times. I'm also wary about how fast things have moved. They've only been together for a few months, but Amy seems convinced they're a match made in heaven. I guess the scandalous option of divorce down the line is there, if necessary. Not that I'm predicting divorce or anything. I'm just rather familiar with the way these men trade in wives like cars when the model gets a dent, or the Botox stops erasing the wrinkles. My own father is on wife number 3. His current wife is all of 28. She used to be his secretary. So cliche. Amy fingers my hair when we reach the door to the ballroom. I used a curling iron to no avail. It's already straightened itself out for me. Amy has this incredible, wavy, sandy blonde hair. The opposite of mine in color and body. Should I give you a wake-up call in the morning? Just to make sure you don't sleep through your alarm? You don't have to do that. You'll be exhausted tomorrow morning after this. You should sleep in for once. I have to work tomorrow. I'll be up early. I don't really understand why anyone would plan an engagement party on a Monday night, but apparently Armstrong's mother was highly influential. Even if it had been on a weekend, there's a good chance Amy would be up anyway. It doesn't matter what time she goes to bed at. Her internal alarm is set for 5:45 a.m. Sounds good. Maybe you can come by my place for lunch or something later. I'm sure I can manage to scrounge up enough money to buy the necessary items to make sandwiches. She makes her scrunchy no-no face. I'm having lunch with Armstrong's mother to discuss wedding plans. I mirror her displeased expression. Have fun with that. We can do dinner later in the week. My treat. You don't have to buy. In all honesty, I can't afford to go out to dinner with Amy unless we do the dollar menu at the burger place down the street from my apartment. But my pride won't let me admit that. Sadly, Amy swears that place gave her food poisoning, so she refuses to entertain eating there. Being in between jobs sucks. I'll take you out to celebrate your audition. If you insist. I would love to eat something that isn't from a cellophane package. I do. She smiles as if it's not a big deal. I'm already reviewing the menus at various restaurants and picking the most reasonable filling dinner options. Amy's unaware of how dire my financial situation currently is. I honestly didn't realize how bad it was until I checked my account yesterday. The one my father doesn't know about. The one that's very close to zero. Until 3 weeks ago, I had a steady paycheck and a role in a successful production that had been running for 5 months. I'd known something was up when the last two paychecks were late, and then bounced entirely. The production company had gone bankrupt, and I suddenly found myself with no income. To make matters even worse, less than a week later, my agent decided to take early retirement with no warning. She dumped her entire client list, leaving us all scrambling for representation. So far, I'm not having much luck securing a new agent or a new role. I need this role. Otherwise, I'm going to have to bite the bullet and get a part-time gig making overpriced coffee for the overpampered dicks in this room. Which I'm not opposed to. It just sucks, given that I graduated with a Triple Threat Award from Randolph almost 2 years ago. I naively assumed my ability to sing, dance, and act would mean an automatic ticket to Broadway. Boy, was I ever wrong about that. So far, I've managed 2 small parts in off-off-Broadway productions. Hopefully tomorrow pans out, and I'm back on the payroll. I don't really want to entertain the alternatives, so I'm thinking positive and hoping for the best. I give her a hug, drain my martini, set the glass on the table, and tell her to have fun. As much as she can, considering the crowd she's managing. The massive chandeliers hanging from the ceiling have been dimmed, so the lighting isn't great. Or maybe it's the effects of the martini impacting the clarity of my vision. I've never been a big drinker. In college, when my friends were chugging beer and doing keg stands at frat parties, I'd be the girl nursing the same red plastic cup all night. It didn't help that all they usually had was beer, which I've never developed a taste for. So, even though I've been sipping the same martini since I arrived, downing the back half of it hits me like I've chugged an entire bottle of vodka, straight, without eating, for at least 2 days. The feeling won't last long, but it's discombobulating regardless. I step through the doors and decide before I jump on the subway, I should use one of the nice, swanky bathrooms. I'm not sure my bladder will be able to make the trip home and the walk to my apartment. Only a few people mill around in the open foyer, talking on cell phones. I spot the restroom sign and head in that direction, attempting to maintain poise. The lighting in this hall is even worse, with only a few accent lamps illuminating the way. It's kind of creepy. The actual bathroom is lovely, with a couch in the corner and a primping mirror. Some woman with ridiculously high heels, abnormally long legs, and a super short tight dress is currently taking up residence in front of the mirror, with half her purse contents strewn over the counter. She's also talking on her phone, speaker style. She might be on video chat, actually, based on the way she has her phone propped up. She pauses for a moment, her gaze shifting to me for a quick glance. I don't even have half a second to form a polite, potentially fake smile before she pulls a face as if she's smelling garbage and looks away. I push through the first door to find a plugged toilet. Holding back a gag, I move on to the next one and find it's clean. Once I'm locked safely in my stall, the model-esque bitchy chick resumes her conversation, as if closing the door somehow makes it impossible for me to hear what she says. I drape my shawl over the hook, along with my purse, and hike up my skirt, tucking it into the front of my dress to prevent it from getting wet, and pull a hover squat. I don't care how nice these bathrooms are. I don't want my skin touching the seat if I can avoid it. the woman preening moans. Do you think this dress makes me look fat? I make a face at the door and hold in a snort. She's rail thin. You look amazing. I bet you look better than Armstrong's fiance. I don't know why he's even marrying her. Her family doesn't have nearly as much money as his. But they're old money, and you know what that means. Her friend makes a disapproving sound. Still. Her dress is so last year. Anyway, I think my date with Benny is going really well. Now that he's not doing that soccer thing anymore, and he's taking a role in his family business, he's definitely more appealing. He played rugby, not soccer, and I totally agree. I roll my eyes at their conversation. These girls are the exact reason I rebel against the entire room of people out there, and everyone associated with them. So shallow. Do you think he'll get an invite back to his place? Her friend asks. I really hope so. That would be ideal. But I don't know. He's been sick or something. He's been taking cold medication all night. Not that it matters. Do you think I should have sex with him if he does invite me back? Or should I play it coy? I need another date out of this, so I don't want to come across as too easy. Maybe just a blowjob, then? That's a good idea. And don't let him take your clothes off. Of course not. I did send him that picture of me sucking on a lollipop a few minutes ago. You don't think that was too forward, do you? He used to be a professional athlete. I'm sure he's used to forward. Wow. This is a seriously classy conversation. I finish my business and avoid eye contact as I head for the sink and turn on the water, hoping to drown out their conversation. There are little bottles of lotion, packaged mints, and, ironically, lollipops arranged by the disposable hand towels. I select a grape one, unwrap it, and pop it in my mouth. I also take a package of mints. If I was alone, I might have hawked everything in that little basket. I drape my shawl over my hand so I don't have to touch the handle, or anything, really. As I'm passing the men's room, the door swings open, and a huge, suited-up guy steps out. He's a tank of a man, his shoulders so broad he has to turn a bit to get through the door. He's staring at the phone in his hand and nearly walks into me. I have the self-preservation required to attempt to get out of his way, lest he mow me over. But my grace has taken a vacation, and I stumble into him instead of away, while simultaneously trying to get the lollipop out of my mouth so I don't appear completely trashy.
Hey.
His voice is a low, deep rasp, like sex dragged over smooth stones. I grab the lapels of his suit jacket to stop from toppling over, and he wraps an arm around my waist to keep me upright, I suppose. I barely get a glimpse of his face before he's right in mine.
You're a bit forward, aren't you?
His nose brushes my cheek as he speaks, warm breath caressing my lips. Warm breath that smells like booze. I don't think... My attempt at a protest doesn't have the desired effect, since he takes the parting of my lips as an invitation for his tongue to enter. The first thing I notice is how much he tastes like scotch. What's worse is that I can probably name the brand if I think about it hard enough. He groans into my mouth, and his arm tightens around my waist. Obviously, this guy has made a mistake. But, as shocked as I am, I have to admit, he's a great kisser. Aside from the boozy taste, his lips are full and soft, and he does this sweep thing with his tongue that makes my knees forget their purpose, which is to keep me upright, or knee him in the nuts for attacking me with his mouth. All the right parts of my body start to warm and tingle as our tongues dance. That's right. I said our, because I'm definitely kissing him back, even though I'm not the intended tongue target. My eyes are wide as a result of the unexpected, although not unwelcome, assault, so I can see his long, pretty lashes resting against his cheek and the straight slope of his nose. I think in addition to being huge, he might also be hot. I flatten my hands on his chest with the intention of pushing him away, because that's what I should do, instead of allowing the continued tongue gymnastic routine. I note first the solid wall of muscle underneath, followed by the softness of the fabric. Instead of creating space between us, I accidentally smooth my hands over the lapels, up past the collar, where I met with warm skin. His hand shifts from my hip to my ass. Suddenly, I can feel a whole lot of something going on behind his fly. At my gasp, he makes another low noise in his throat. Before I can decide whether I should still shove him away or keep making out with him, a shrill, familiar voice cuts through Awesome Kisser's rumbling groan. It's close, like right in my ear.
Ben, what are you doing?
His tongue retracts from my mouth and his hand from my ass. Turning his head toward the horrific noise, his confused gaze flips between me and the bathroom selfie girl. And then he coughs, right in my face. I make a gagging sound and use my shawl to wipe his spit from my cheek, while Awesome Kisser apologizes. To whom? I'm uncertain. He searches his pocket for something. A tissue, maybe? Bathroom girl gives me a look of revulsion and turns her angry gaze on Awesome Kisser.
This?
She sweeps a hand down, gesturing to her ultra-fit body, wrapped in her tight dress.
Could have been yours tonight.
She spins on her 11-inch heels, her hair fanning out impressively, as she sashays past us down the hall.
Brittany, stop. I thought it was you.
Of course, her name is Brittany. It's a common money name, like Tiffany and Stephanie, and all the other names that end with an I-E or Annie. Not that mine is any better. How I ended up with a name like Ruby, I'll never know. I'm not even born in July, so it has nothing to do with my birthstone. The only similarity between Brittany and me is that we're female, with hair on our heads. Hers is close to the same color as mine in this awful lighting, but it's about 8 inches shorter. We're also both wearing dresses. They're both dark, mine a deep wine color, and hers black. Mine hits a few inches above my knee. Hers barely skims the bottom of her ass. Brittany spins dramatically to face her could-have-been-bed partner, her expression incredulous. She gestures a perfectly manicured hand at me.
How drunk are you? You think this bargain basement-wearing slut looks like me?
I huff.
Seriously? If your dress was half an inch shorter, your vagina would be showing. And you're calling me a slut?
Mostly I'm jealous of how good she looks in it, but she's the one who started with the insults. Besides, I'm not at fault here. It's the amazing kisser who stuck his talented tongue in my mouth and subsequently ruined the hotness by coughing in my face.
Awesome Kisser steps between us, his wide shoulders almost blocking out my view of the angry skankatron.
Whoa, ladies. It's a simple misunderstanding. Let's not get nasty.
I note the barely imperceptible slur at the end, extending the S. He reaches out and puts a hand against the wall, as if he's barring a potential attack. Except then I realize it's to steady himself. He's definitely drunk, which would explain the accidental tongue gnastics. I don't know why I'm wasting my breath. Brittany sneers. I'm going home. Delete my number. He runs a frustrated hand through his thick, wavy, luxurious hair. And this man does not have plugs either. All that sexy is his.
Fuck.
He turns and gives me a quick once-over. I take a quick look down and notice his shoes are black and polished, with no pointy toe. Confident and low maintenance. I note a few important details while he assesses me. The error that cost him the hot, sure thing. First of all, his eyes are bloodshot and his focus is divided, which could very well explain his inability to discern me from the dark-haired Barbie doll storming away. His nose is a little red, and he seems pale. His brow is also glistening just a smidge. I also note the very obvious lump jacking up the front of his dress pants. I feel some satisfaction that my kissing skills are decent enough to give him a Woody. Finally, and most important, this brick house of a man is smoking hot. Even if he is sick, based on Brittany's bathroom reports. Like on a scale of 1 to 10, he's a 7 million. He clears his throat.
I'm really sorry I sexually harassed you and coughed on you. I've been popping cold meds like candy tonight. And I think I had one too many scotches. I honestly thought you were her. Even though clearly you're not.
Well, that's rude. He gestures to my body and then my face as he expels a quick breath.
I mean, you're... wow, just... hot.
Or maybe he's not that rude.
Anyway, she's a friend of the family, so I have to fix this. I need to go. You might want to take some vitamin C or something when you get home.
With that unnecessary, but somewhat appreciated, explanation, he turns around and jogs down the hall. I guess I should be flattered that he mistook me for a supermodel, even if he is hammered and drugged.
Chapter 2. The Impact of Flu Medication and Alcohol. Bancroft. I take one last look at the woman I accidentally molested before I follow Brittany's swishing hair and swaying ass down the hall and through the foyer. If Brittany wasn't my date and I hadn't promised my mother I'd give going out with her an honest shot, I'd be inclined to go back and get that girl's number. She's got a nice mouth. In the very short time I kissed her, I imagined putting things other than my tongue in it. Not very refined of me, but honest nonetheless. I don't call after Brittany once I'm in the foyer. I know too many people, and I think, based on her recent reaction, she's likely to throw a fit, drawing attention I don't need. What I should have done was canceled tonight on account of being sick as a dog this past week. But I didn't want to upset my mother by canceling the date, or piss Armstrong off by missing the engagement party, so I loaded up on a variety of drugs and bit the bullet. Now I'd have to smooth things over with Brittany. Pretty much the second I picked Brittany up, she alluded to coming back to my place later. I've heard some rumors about her and her mouth, and not just about her penchant for gossip, which I'm also familiar with since I've known Brittany most of my life. The selfie of her sucking on the lollipop was a pretty solid indicator that a nightcap would not just involve talking. When I ran into that woman in the hall, I assumed it was Brittany making her move and figured I might as well get it over with. I should have known better than to jump on that opportunity, since it would likely cause more unnecessary issues. But the cold meds and the drinks tonight are messing with my ability to make rational, well-thought-out decisions, hence my making out with some random woman in the hall. Besides, bringing Brittany was a favor orchestrated by my mother. Apparently, Brittany's date ditched her at the last minute, and my mother thought it would be the perfect opportunity to swoop in and play matchmaker. Normally, I don't bend to my mother's whims when it comes to my dating life, but a little over a year ago, the importance of family was pretty much thrown in my face all at once. She had a health scare, one that resulted in a battery of tests and a lot of anxiety. It was during the middle of the championship, so I couldn't come home at all while she was in and out of the hospital. To make matters worse, not long after that, my grandmother passed away. She was an incredible woman. Her loss shook us all. She'd been very much the glue in our family. So ever since I moved back to New York, my mother has been on me about dating and settling down. I have a lot of guilt about not being there for her when she needed me, so I caved when she suggested the date with Brittany. It also got me out of the charity bachelor auction that she was going to volunteer me for, but I had to agree to a second date. According to her, Brittany comes from good breeding, which in the world I was raised in is more important than it should be. I understand that my mother's views on relationships aren't uncommon based on her upbringing, and there may have been a time when I would have probably shared her ideals. But I've spent the last 7 years playing professional rugby, and it's changed my views on a lot of things. Relationships and how they function, or rather dysfunction, being one of them. I don't make eye contact with anyone as I maintain a brisk but casual stroll toward the elevators. It's taking more effort than I expected to stay on a straight path. People kept handing me scotch tonight. It was hard to say no, especially in this crowd. Brittany's too high shoes prevent her from making a speedy escape. She walks like she's on the runway no matter where she goes. It's a little ridiculous. She reaches the elevator just as the doors open, so I have to pick up my pace. She keeps jamming the button, but I shove my arm in before the doors can close all the way and step inside. Thanks for holding the elevator for me. I should rein in the attitude, but I'm annoyed at the negative turn in my evening, and the cold meds I took a few hours ago are already wearing off. I feel like garbage. She makes a disgruntled sound, crosses her arms over her chest, and stares straight ahead. I don't feel like dealing with this. I could manage when she was being flirty and alluding to things she wanted to do later. Now she's being an overdramatic princess, and I don't do overdramatic princesses. Although I can understand her current discontent, even if the hissy fit seems unnecessary. Mistake or not, I did stick my tongue in someone else's mouth when I'm supposed to be her date. I lean against the opposite wall as the elevator descends. I'm sorry about that other girl. I thought it was you.
I'm not going home with you tonight, she huffs.
I shove my hands in my pockets. If she still wanted to come back to my place, I'd have more concerns than I already do about her. There's no fucking way I'd sleep with her anyway, because I like my balls where they are, and I'm not interested in losing them to her father if he found out I screwed his daughter the first time I took her out. That's probably a good idea. I'm still not feeling 100%. I have a business trip coming up in a few days and a meeting tomorrow morning. I don't have time for this. I'm still in recovery mode from this cold and flu double slam I've been hit with, and I can't afford to feel like this when I'm getting on a plane in the near future.
I can't believe you thought she was me. I'm prettier than her, aren't I?
She lifts her chin and sniffs, her offense clear. That other woman is 10 times hotter, but telling Brittany that would be digging myself a deeper hole. Honesty isn't always the best choice. I'm in such a bad mood now. I didn't get a good look at her. It's lame, but I've written off any more fun for tonight. In my head, I'm already in the shower, rubbing one out to the image of the woman I did kiss, not the one pouting in the corner. Besides, Brittany really isn't my type. She's pretty, but she wears far too much makeup. In the few seconds I had to get a good look at the woman I made out with in the hall, and recognized the very serious error I'd made, I noticed she's definitely gorgeous. Dark hair and green eyes, not too petite, with curves in all the right places, and a natural beauty that makes my nuts ache. And that's saying something with all the medication I'm on. I've only had to rub one out twice this week. I'm that sick.
Why are you looking at me like that?
I already told you I'm not coming home with you. Brittany huffs and glances at her reflection in the mirror, fixing out-of-place hairs. I shake my head, coming out of my haze. I must have spaced out while she was talking. God, I feel like garbage. I'm still going to make sure you get home safely. Despite my frustration over the situation, I'm not going to leave her to find her own ride.
I know how to hail a cab.
I give up on talking and mentally review my checklist for the next few days. My suit is already laid out for my morning meeting. This Monday night engagement party isn't helping me get the sleep I need. I have to be out of the house first thing, and then I need to get on organizing paperwork for my trip. 5 weeks overseas is a long time, and I can't afford to forget essential files. This trip is important. It's my test to see if I can manage things without my father breathing down my neck. The elevator dings, and Brittany struts past me, flipping her hair over her shoulder, smacking me in the face. I let her walk on ahead. I've forgotten to call my driver, so I have to spend a few extra awkward minutes with a pouting Brittany. Finally, the car comes, and Ralph, my driver, exits the vehicle, apologizing for the delay. I'm sure he can tell by the look on my face and Brittany's sour expression that neither of us is excited about having to wait. I open the door for her and extend a hand, which she ignores. We'll just head to Ms. Thornton's, okay, Ralph? I pat him on the shoulder and he lifts a brow, but remains silent as I slide in beside my annoyed date. She shifts away from me until she's in the corner. I lean my head against the backrest and wait, because this can't be the end of her words. I'm so tired. And then I remember that my mother made me agree to 2 dates. I'm beginning to wonder if the bachelor auction would have been better than this. My mother will make sure I follow through on my promise. She's determined to have me settled down since my older brother Lexington, whose former girlfriend ended things several months ago, has shown no interest in returning to the dating pool, unless it's for a hookup. 7 years of being on the road, of constant travel, has made any kind of lasting relationship impossible. I've learned that long-distance relationships rarely ever work. When I agreed to come work with my father, I assumed I'd finally be able to put down some roots, and with that, I might actually be able to find someone I could have a relationship with. It's been a long time since I've had something stable or significant, except now he's making me travel again, and the distance thing just isn't something I want to contend with. I don't look anything like that slut. Brittany pulls me out of my internal musings. Nope. Arguing seems pointless. Although I'm not sure I'd classify her as a slut. Do you know her? Have you gone out with her before? Did you know she was going to be at the party? I can't believe you'd do that to me in front of all those people. I slowly turn my head to look at her. This is an awful lot of drama for a first date. No, I don't know her. No, I haven't gone out with her before. No, I didn't know she'd be at the party. And what do you mean, all those people? We were the only ones in that hallway. She was kissing you back. I saw tongue, hers, in your mouth. She points an accusing finger at me. And yours was in hers. This is true. Despite me being a complete stranger, my mystery girl did indeed kiss me back. That's something to ponder later. Look, Brittany, I already told you it was a mistake. And I get that she doesn't look like you, but the hallway was poorly lit. I saw long hair and a dark dress, and I reacted. I've been sick all week and on cold medication all day. I didn't want to cancel our date, so I took more than I should have tonight. I know it's not an excuse, but it's the truth. I avert my gaze and close my eyes, trying not to picture the woman I ended up kissing tonight. You're right. It isn't an excuse at all. I thought we were having a nice time. She's pulling out the whiny voice now. I hope kissing that skank was worth it. It's a good thing my eyes are closed, otherwise she'd see me roll them. The car comes to a stop and Ralph buzzes me through the intercom to let us know we've arrived. He won't lower the privacy window or open a door until I buzz him back. This is you, I say. Brittany makes a pouty face. Too bad we didn't have more fun. I buzz Ralph to thank him. I may be annoyed by my date, but I still have manners. I'll walk you to your door.
You don't need to do that.
I open the door and step onto the sidewalk to wait for her. She rearranges her skirt and takes my offered hand. As she steps out, she flashes me. She's not wearing panties, so I get a glimpse of what I'll be missing out on tonight. I'm sure she's done this on purpose. I assume it's to taunt me. Considering my current state, I'm likely to pass out on her at any minute. Over the years, a lot of women have pulled this move on me. It worked the first few times, but it's a little boring when there's no chase. It's always better when I have to work for it. I walk her to her door and apologize for what happened again, even though I'm not sure how sorry I really am anymore. Her theatrics are a little too much to handle. Apparently, my courteous actions seem to have flipped yet another one of her switches. After she unlocks the door, she turns to me, looking me over as she licks her lips.
You know,
she adjusts my tie, which was perfectly straight before she touched it.
If you really wanted to, you could show me how sorry you are.
As drugged up as I am, I'm almost positive this is a proposition. Oh, and how would I do that?
By coming up for a nightcap.
I turn my head and cough into the crook of my elbow. I can't believe she's still interested after the shit show tonight has turned out to be. I should probably take a rain check on that, considering I'm not feeling well. I wouldn't want to make you sick, too.
There are other places you can kiss me besides my mouth.
I have to resist the urge to sit her down and lecture her on self-respect. I can't believe she's propositioning me after I kissed someone else, accidentally or not. That's usually where I start, and it seems like a poor idea with how I'm feeling. Wouldn't you agree? She sighs and runs her hands over my chest.
I guess. Are you free next week? I'm sure you'll be feeling better by then.
I'm leaving on a business trip later this week, but can I call you when I get back? I cringe internally and hope the emotion doesn't make it to my face.
Okay,
she says enthusiastically. I let her hug me and give her my cheek when she goes in for a kiss. I wait until she goes inside before I head back to the waiting car, mystified by her continued interest in me. As I settle in for the ride home, I think about the woman I did kiss. I definitely need to find out who she is so I can send her flowers and maybe a bottle of vitamin C capsules for my accidental manhandling.
Chapter 3. Screw you, awesome kisser. Ruby. I eat an entire Listerine pocket pack on the subway ride home to kill any lingering germs in my mouth from awesome kisser. I'm annoyed by the whole thing. But at least he apologized and seemed sincere about the accidental tongue invasion. Too bad the hotness of the memory is marred by raging Brittany and the hack in the face. After getting home, I rinse with mouthwash, down 6 vitamin C capsules, and some anti-flu holistic stuff. And then I go ahead and make myself my customary before-bed pre-audition nighttime drink of hot honey lemon water. And pray I've done a good enough job of ridding myself of cough germs. I climb into bed, note my sheets lack a fresh scent. Question when I last washed them. Then I set my alarm and close my eyes. Behind my lids appears the hot tie, whose name is apparently Banny, or maybe I misheard and it's Danny? It's not really a hot guy name. I'm going to stick with Awesome Kisser. Now that I'm past the shock and awe factor, I can fully appreciate that man's hotness in the shouty cap sense of the word. It's unfortunate he dates vapid, self-absorbed, model-y types and not starving artists. I have a feeling date isn't the appropriate word anyway. It's also unfortunate that he has poor coughing manners. I consider that he was likely a guest at the engagement party, and he very well may be a guest at the wedding as well. If I'm still dateless by then, he could make an excellent potential dance partner, depending, of course, on how tight he is with Armstrong. If they're close friends, I don't think it's advisable to get involved in any semi-unclothed dancing outside of the wedding celebrations, no matter how hot he is. I don't want to run the risk of encountering him again should things not go as well as one hopes. Eventually, I stop fantasizing about what's under his suit and pass out. I'm about to find out exactly what's in Awesome Kisser's designer pants when a repetitive, annoying sound distracts me. I pause just before I smooth a hand over the amazingly prominent bulge while he tilts my head back, his soft lips brushing mine, his hot tongue sweeping. The wisps of the dream fade and I crack a lid. The fantasy breaks with the obnoxious sunlight screaming its wake-up call, along with my stupid phone. Sometimes I'm slutty in my dreams. I reach for the phone, remembering that Amy promised me a morning call, just in case I messed up my alarm, which has happened in the past. I was on the ball last night, though. I set 3 alarms, all within 5 minutes of each other, so I wouldn't have an opportunity to fall back asleep. Rise and shine, Ruby. I'm your wake-up call. How she manages to sound so damn chipper at 7:30 in the morning after her engagement party is beyond me. A seal-like bark comes out when I attempt to grumble hello and tell her off for interrupting my dream. Ruby, are you there? I make a second attempt at speaking, but all I manage is another bark. Do you have a bad connection? I told you not to go with the cheap provider. You know how terrible the reception is. I clear my throat and immediately regret it, as it feels like knives are traveling up my esophagus. Ruby? Amy asks again, and then sighs. I'm hanging up and trying again. Once the line goes dead, I immediately hit the video call. Amy picks up right away. She's wearing a white robe with her wavy hair pulled up into a ponytail, looking as fresh as baked bread out of the oven. I, on the other hand, look like yesterday's garbage, based on the small image in the corner of my phone. Oh my God, are you okay? I motion to my throat and shake my head. I give speaking another shot, just in case my inability to make more than random, audible sounds is a result of waking up. I usually don't have to use words until after my morning coffee. All I get is another one of those squeaky moans, and more sharp pain in my throat. Amy sucks in a gasp and slaps her hand over her mouth. You have no voice! I nod. How are you going to audition? The final dregs of sleep slip away. I mouth, oh God. A mime is the only part I can audition for with no voice, or one of the dancer roles with no lines. They don't make nearly as much money as central or even secondary character roles, which is what I'm hoping to score. The pay scale for that is far higher than for a lineless role. It definitely won't cover the basics, like rent and food, let alone the minimum payments on my credit card. I've been banking on this audition to get me out of the hole I've dug for myself over the past few weeks. The phone conversation is pointless, since Amy can't read lips and I can't respond. She tells me she's coming over. I try to tell her not to bother, but again, with the lack of words, it's impossible to convey. I wait until she hangs up and text her to tell her it's not necessary. Besides, this thing I have is clearly contagious, since I must have gotten it from Awesome Kisser, and I don't want to pass it on to her. Damn Awesome Kisser, ruining the already questionable state of my life. I roll out of bed, the full body ache hitting me with the movement. I must be dying. And I'm not just being dramatic. Every cell in my body hurts. I drag myself to the kitchen and fill the kettle. Maybe a lemon honey hot water toddy would help restore my voice. Based on the recent unlucky streak, I have my doubts. I shuffle to the bathroom, turn on the shower, and root around in the medicine cabinet for some decent drugs. All I have is regular strength Tylenol, so it'll have to do. I climb into the shower without checking the temperature first. It takes forever to heat up and then fluctuates between lukewarm and scalding. I step under the spray during a scalding phase and huddle in the corner until it's bearable. I'd like to say the shower helps me feel better. It does not. The warm water also does little to help my voice. Although I'm past just squeaking to barely audible one-word phrases such as, ow, I'm praying to the voice miracle gods that the honey-lemon combo will further improve my ability to speak. Once out of the shower, I doctor up my water,
adding extra lemon and honey. Not only do I burn the crap out of my tongue, it feels like serrated blades coated in acid sliding down my throat. Still, I get dressed in basic black tights and a black tank with a loose gauzy gray shirt over top. I dry my hair and put on makeup in hopes that appearing put together will make it so. I have to double up on powder when the effort to prepare my face causes me to sweat. I take a second hot lemon honey toddy with me on the subway and arrive for my audition half an hour early. Not that my promptness matters. I'm still unable to speak above a whisper. My despair balloons like a marshmallow in the microwave at the mass of people performing voice warm-up exercises around me. I make an attempt to do the same, but the hoarse, croak-like sound is drowned out by the crystal-clear voice of the perfectly gorgeous woman standing next to me. As I listen to the sound of a thousand soaring angels spew out of her mouth, I shiver with what I fear is the beginning of a fever. Sweat breaks out across the back of my neck and travels down my spine, along with a violent shiver. As if today could be any worse than it already is, my stomach does this weird nodding thing. Ruby Scott? I glance at the director, who's thankfully still looking fresh and not beaten down by hundreds of craptastic auditions. Those are yet to come. I shoulder my bag and follow him to the theater. You're auditioning for the role of Emma today, correct? He doesn't give me a chance to confirm. I'd like you to start with the song at the beginning of Act Two.
Okay.
I croak feebly, cringing at the raspy sound. At least I can speak, even if I sound like a prepubescent boy with his nuts caught in his zipper. The director looks up from his clipboard, his frown an omen.
I seem to have lost my voice.
He has to strain to hear me. He heaves a frustrated sigh.
You can't audition if you don't have a voice.
I didn't want to miss it. Maybe I could audition for a dancer part.
Fewer words are better. He purses his lips.
Auditions for dancer roles aren't until later in the week.
I understand, but I'm here, and if you can't hear me sing, at least you could see me dance.
I fight the gag reflex as another wave of nausea hits me. He sighs and relents, gesturing to the stage. I thank him, then drop my bag at the edge of the stage and get into first position. My brain is foggy and my body aches horribly, but I can't pass up this opportunity for a modest, yet steady income for a few months. I can't afford to rack up additional credit card debt, and I don't want to ask my father for more money, because that will make him aware of how much of a struggle this is. Then he'll make his case for me to come work for him, as is his master plan. I know I can do this. The music cues up, and as I start to move, my stomach does that rolling heave thing again. There isn't any food in it, but all of a sudden, the honey lemon water I consumed this morning decides to stage a revolt. I'm in the middle of a spin. Not the best idea when nauseous. And the next wave hits me. Violent and unrelenting. I attempt to keep my mouth closed, but the intensity of the spasm forces it open. I spray the stage with partially digested honey lemon water and what appears to be last night's shrimp tarts and mushroom canapé appetizer dinner in an exorcist-like dramatic flair. And thus ends my audition. It appears I should have come back later in the week for the dancer role auditions. No amount of apologizing can make up for my spray vomit. It doesn't help that I've managed to hit the director with my impressive reach. I almost slip on my own puke spray in my haste to find the nearest bathroom, because a second wave is coming. I manage to make it to the hall and a potted plant before it hits. By round three, I'm in the bathroom. Sadly, it's a public stall, and based on the odor, the cleanliness is highly questionable. I wonder if it's reflective of the success of this particular theater's productions. I spent a good hour in there, moaning and crying, until all I can do is dry heave. The worst part is that in my rush to find a bathroom to destroy, I forgot my purse in the theater. I'll have to wait for a break in the auditions before I can sneak back in and retrieve it. Thankfully, it's still at the edge of the stage, so I creep in, grab it, and haul ass, which is really a very slow and uncoordinated hobble run, before the director has a chance to see me again, or I him. The subway ride home is perilous. People keep their distance, likely because I have the cold sweats and smell awful. Once home, I spend an uncountable number of hours on the bathroom floor, curled up with a towel as a blanket and a roll of cheap, rough toilet paper as a pillow. A knock on my door the following morning, I only know it's morning based on the light pouring through my bathroom window, is the reason I pry myself away from my makeshift tile floor bed. My body hurts a lot. So does my head and every other part of me. I'm still dressed in my audition clothes. I smell like day-old vomit. Based on the stains on my gray shirt, I didn't have the best aim yesterday. I rinse my mouth with water and then mouthwash, but it burns, so I spit it out after a quick swish. I shuffle to the door and check the peephole before I open it. Occasionally, solicitors manage to get into the building. I have no interest in someone trying to sway my political leaning or in adopting a new religion today. Although, with the way I look, I have my doubts anyone would want me to join their organization. It's not a solicitor. It's Amy. She never stops by unannounced. I left the chain lock off, apparently unconcerned for my own safety, so I flip the deadbolt and open it. Ruby Astor Scott, what is the meaning of this? She holds a piece of paper in front of my face, too close for me to read. She drops her hand before I have a chance to take it from her. Also, my reflexes are slow. Her angry face becomes a shocked one. Oh, my God! What happened to you? She pushes her way inside, almost knocking me over. Although I'm pretty unsteady on my feet, so I can't blame it completely on her. Amy covers her mouth with her sleeve. What's the smell? Why haven't you answered my calls? I was going to call the police. I think I have the flu, I croak. I have more of a voice today than I did yesterday. Sort of. I've been trying to get a hold of you for the past 24 hours. You can't do that to me. Really, what is that smell? It's probably me. She drops her arm and sniffs. Her nose wrinkles. You need a shower. Or a bath. She surveys my apartment, and her frown deepens. I'm admittedly not the best housekeeper. Until a few months ago, I had someone come in every other week to keep it manageable for me. When my father threatened to cut off his financial assistance a few months ago, I cut back on unnecessary expenses, which included Ursula. But I'll blame the current disorder on my illness. Amy's expensive heels click across the floor as she heads for the bathroom. She gags her displeasure at the smell in there, which I assume is a more concentrated version of me. A pair of rubber gloves, some bathroom cleaner, a lot of complaining,
and 15 minutes of vigorous scrubbing, and my bathroom no longer smells like the Vomitron. Amy runs a bath in my freshly cleaned tub, pushes me inside, and closes the door. "Don't come out for at least 20 minutes," she yells from the other side. I've been friends with Amy since freshman year in prep school. We moved to NYC together 5 years ago for college. Of the two of us, she's definitely the more successful. Although there is a big difference between a dual degree in business management and public relations and one in theater. In the 2 years since we've graduated, she's managed to turn her final internship at one of the most popular fashion magazines into a full-time job, and she's already been promoted once. On top of Amy's fabulous job with its excellent paycheck, Amy has also managed to meet the man of her dreams. At least that's what she claims. While I routinely manage a handful of dates before I tap out, or until they do when I don't put out, or I'm kissed by germ-infested strangers with an angry date. I wonder if this is karma's way of trying to tell me something. And if so, what exactly is the message? Don't use the bathroom? Don't suck on lollipops? Be sluttier? I must fall asleep in the tub, because I startle at the knock on the door. "Ruby, it's been more than half an hour. Are you still alive?"
"I'll be on 5.
I call in my broken, craggy voice. The water has cooled, and I shiver as I rush through washing my hair and my body. I feel a lot more human, and a lot less barfy after I'm clean. Exiting the bathroom, I find Amy has tidied my apartment. The garbage and dirty dishes that were stacked in the sink and on the counter have either been thrown out or washed. My sheets have been changed, and the pile of clothes on the floor is now crammed into my laundry basket.
"You didn't have to clean my apartment."
"Well, you sure don't seem capable of it. You look like hell. I'm taking it the audition didn't go well."
"Not unless I was trying out for a part in The Exorcist."
I flop down on my bed. The energy it's taken to bathe requires me to be prone again. "What do you mean? What happened?" She hands me a steaming mug with a slice of lemon in it. I set it on the nightstand, unsure if I can stomach the last thing I hurled. I give her the abridged version of the events, including the worst parts, like the projectile vomiting.
"Oh, Lord." "Yeah, I don't think I'll be getting another audition with that director unless I officially change my name."
"Do you think it's food poisoning? Oh, God, is this my fault?" She claps one hand over her mouth in horror and grips the arm of the chair with the other. The well-worn chair is one of the few items in this apartment I actually own. I've had it since freshman year of college. I bought it from a thrift store in a show of rebellion against my father, who disapproved fully of my plan to pursue a career in theater. He still footed the bill for what my scholarships didn't cover in tuition, and he dropped money in my bank account that I obviously used along the way, just not for furniture.
"It's not food poisoning. Some random guy mistook me for someone else and jammed his tongue down my throat when I was leaving the party. Then he coughed in my face, and his date accused me of being a slut."
"Pardon?" She drops her hand and gives me a disbelieving look. I can understand why it sounds crazy, and realistically, the whole situation definitely is. Again, I have to wonder if karma is responsible for this. I explain the entire thing from the beginning.
"So this is my fault. How are you responsible for some random guy mistaking me for his date in a semi-dark hallway?
They were probably my guests."
"It's not your fault."
I close my eyes for a few seconds and consider whether or not I can tolerate food yet. The thought of chewing exhausts me. After a long pause,
Amy asks, "When was the last time you asked your dad for money?" It's an odd lead-in question considering my current state. Not in a while. Why? Amy knows how much it burns my ass that I'm still reliant on him at all. For the past 5 years, he's been taking care of my rent and some of my other expenses. When he threatened to cut me off a while back, I opened another account, including an additional credit card and a small line of credit. My plan was to be able to put away some money on my own and not use his, so I could show him once and for all that I'm capable of surviving without his bank account. Unfortunately, with the recent lack of paychecks, I've had to use my credit card more than I'd like, and my line of credit. Are you by chance planning to move, but forgot to tell me? If I was moving out of this crap hole, you'd be the first person I'd tell. I have no idea why she's asking me this. I was afraid you'd say that. Amy sighs and pushes up, crossing over to my desk, which she didn't bother to clean, and picks up a piece of paper. I live in a studio apartment that's about 350 square feet, so it doesn't take much for her to retrieve it. I hate to bring this up right now. Unfortunately, it's kind of a big issue that needs to be managed. Huge block letters spell out lease termination notice at the top of the page, followed by a bunch of legal jargon outlining the parameters of my lease agreement and the date by which I have to be out of my apartment, which is 5 days from now. I read the blah, blah, blah between the termination and the date of my lease's expiry. The last three checks have bounced. This doesn't make any sense. My father's new secretary, the one he's not married to, puts money in that account every month to cover the rent. Maybe you should call your dad. I drop down on the edge of the mattress. There has to be a reasonable explanation for this. I'm going to call his secretary. I pull up my contact list and scroll down to Yvette. She's only been working for my father for the past 6 months or so. I preferred his previous secretary. Unfortunately, I have a feeling my stepmother may not have appreciated her youth or her bubbly personality. Yvette is significantly older. Yvette answers on the third ring.
Scott Pharmaceuticals, Yvette speaking. Please hold.
Hi, Yvette.
I'm cut off by the elevator music, followed by an advertisement for my father's penis drugs. I roll my eyes and put my phone on speaker while I wait. 5 minutes later, she finally clicks back over.
Thank you for holding. Yvette speaking. How may I help you today?
Hi, Yvette. It's Ruby.
Hello. How may I direct your call, Ruby?
Amy and I exchange a look. It's Harrison's daughter.
Oh, Ruby, of course. How silly of me.